Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What's the first step in decision-making that almost everyone misses? Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Cruz. Welcome to the LeadX Show. I hope you're telling your friends at work that this is the smartest way to start your day, the ideal way to start the commute. Put on the LeadX Show and get a little bit better. Also, hope you'll visit leadx.org, where we're offering a new free online course every single day. We cover leadership, management, productivity, and a lot more is on the way. Today on the show, you're going to hear from someone who cold contacted me on LinkedIn. She had a unique viewpoint on one of our prior episodes. We were talking about values and decision making. And I just said, hey, let's bring this conversation from the LinkedIn platform onto the show. We talk about the power of and, not or, and also why super candor is the start of great decision making. But first, today's tip is core values. After 5 grueling years, I sold my company, got a big payday, and quit. Brief elation, but on about day 3, I woke up and I just felt weird. Why should I get out of bed? Like, literally. I would have started a new company to make this uncomfortable feeling just go away. I would have pushed it down, but I had a non-compete, so I couldn't start a new company. So I was forced to decide, what will I do with my time? Why should I get out of bed? I had chased success or achievement or fill in the blank for so long, I'd forgotten to slow down and ask, you know, what's my purpose? What's the purpose of all of this? What do I really value? Every day, we all decide, maybe we even struggle, with how to spend our time. Should we stay late at work? Should we go to the gym? Should we rush home and eat dinner with our kids? Too often, our decisions leave us feeling guilty or stressed. We forget to ask, what do we value? What are our values? Many people use the 5F framework. They focus on faith, fitness, family, friends, and finances. 7 F's if you add fun and future. Other people identify their values with, you know, from a long list of value words like authenticity, adventure, balance, compassion, contribution, humor, love, religion, security, trust, wisdom. Now, I'm a simple guy. I always tell everybody, if it's more than 3, I ain't gonna remember it. So my values are health, wealth, and love. So now each morning I wake up, I recite my purpose, my personal purpose statement, and then I think about how I'm going to live my values for that day. Each day is different. There's no right answer, but I think about it in advance. Health, treadmill, love, date night, wealth, film a course for LeadX. Then I get out of bed. Core values. Our guest today is the founder of Lead Above Noise, whose mission is to empower leaders to catalyze performance and deliver business results. Through consulting and workshops, she ignites the activation of micro changes, the tiniest increments of change that maximize impact while minimizing disruption. Leveraging both her academic background in organizational psychology and her corporate experience in a Fortune 100 company, she's worked with such organizations as American Express, Cisco, Scholastic Books, Audible, and many more. Our guest is Rachel Cook. Rachel, welcome to the LeadX Show.
I'm thrilled to be here, Kevin. Thank you.
Now, we were talking a little bit before we officially went on air here. You know, how you became a guest is a little bit interesting because you listened, you heard the episode where I was actually interviewing Dina Dwyer Owens. We were talking about values, and I happened to mention I was working on my next book, and I've got a chapter about you know, no rules. And you cold emailed me to sort of join the conversation or link on LinkedIn, I think it was, right?
It may have been.
I thought that was really cool because I always encourage listeners to reach out, to connect, tell me what they like, what they don't like. You know, I thought you handled it great. You basically were disagreeing with me in a very agreeable way. But before we get into that conversation, as you know, we have the tradition of always asking a couple of questions up front. And the first one's always, will you tell us about a time when you failed so we can hear the lesson learned?
Let's do it. Let's start on a low note, shall we? So I have a story I'm going to tell you, and it dates back to the really early days of my career. And I chose this story not to distance my present self from it. I assure you, I fail regularly, but it was a really foundational moment for me. And it also kind of pitted me as the punchline of a joke. So the story I want to tell you is the first job that I ever took coming out of graduate school. I had just wrapped up my degree in organizational psychology, and I took a job with an industrial distribution company, which is exactly as unsexy as it sounds. But the hook was they had this management rotation program. And what they said to me was, listen, industrial distribution, we've got that covered. We have lots of people that do that well. What we're looking for from you is kind of an attitude and an aptitude and an appetite for leadership. So come on in, we'll teach you the basics of our business, but we want you to help us find ways to make our business better. And for me, being the young whippersnapper ready to show the world what I had to offer, this sounded amazing. So I came on and I show up on day one and I get my assignment, and I am now the manager of a 50-person department out in the warehouse operation.
Oh, wow.
So I now have 50 men, all men, reporting to me, all of them older than me, many of them older than my dad. And I'm standing out there in my steel-toed boots and my hard hat, and I'm ready to kind of show them that I'm gonna teach you guys a thing or two. And so about halfway through my first day, one of the members of my team comes up to me kind of urgently. And he's like, Rachel, we have a problem. We really need your help. We can't find the pallet shrinker anywhere. And my inner Clark Kent kind of jumps up, and I'm ready to be the hero, and I'm going to find this thing. I realize I have no idea what it looks like. And so I whip out my walkie-talkie and I start calling around to my colleagues, the managers of different departments. And I'm really being met by what I can only describe as a lot of apathy, which doesn't really make sense to me until I finally pick my head up and look around and see smirks and chuckles and lack of eye contact, at which point it dawns on me that pallets are made of wood and shrinkers are not a thing, and I have been hazed.
Oh.
And it was official. And it was really painful. Like, but, you know, I wasn't the first and I wasn't the last. But what they were reminding me of, and what really lies at the core of the work we do today, is that leadership is not about how smart you are and your heroics, but it is about what you can catalyze and leverage from your team. And the way that you do that is by building relationships and watching how they work and asking questions and having conversations and hearing their ideas. And it was exactly the experience I needed to have. And that is what I take with me today.
Wow, that's a heck of a story. And I'm curious, like, were you eventually able to sort of, you know, build some rapport and connect and contribute as a leader, or was it all bad with that team?
No, I totally was. It was, like I said, I appreciated their willingness to almost slap me in the face a little bit, because in a lot of organizations, they just sort of humor you and pretend, and these guys weren't about that. And yeah. So yeah, I really figured out quickly, you know, these guys have been here for years. They know what they're doing. I need to help them find the opportunities to enhance and kind of be a partner with them. And that's kind of how we rolled going forward.
That's great. And unfortunately, I didn't have anyone slap me in the face until much later in life. And it's, you know, I think it's true. A lot of high achievers, you know, you do climb the ranks of the organization. You go into leadership roles, and it's sort of natural for us to be that superhero. Let me fix this. Let me make that decision. Let me solve all your problems. But that's not really what we're supposed to be doing.
It's not.
So it's kind of against our nature, and sometimes against what got us into the new role. But that's a great story. So let me build on that and just sort of ask another, you know, follow on, like a more generic question. So, you know, what advice would you give to other, you know, first time managers out there who are trying to grow and become effective leaders?
So I would say, you know, certainly there is the humility piece, which I think I just demonstrated painfully through that story. But I think hand in hand with that, another piece of advice I would give to first-time leaders, and I'm seeing this everywhere, it is letting go of the idea that busy is kind of a badge of honor, right? And we're in this culture now where how are you? Oh, I'm so busy sort of translates to I'm so important, I'm so in demand. And the reality is being busy is not a badge of honor. It is a signal that you're not focused, you're not prioritized, you're not in control of your day. And, you know, my story goes to show that being a great leader is about listening and observing and engaging. And when you are so focused on being so important and so busy, you miss those opportunities to really build those relationships and gain those insights. And so that would probably be my biggest piece of advice. If you are so busy, see that as a symptom of something and not as a badge of honor.
Yeah, that's great. And again, I mean, in my 20s, I just thought I could win through hustle. And I wish you had given me that advice a lot of years ago, because I mean, it was sacrificing, you know, my health and my relationships and everything to work. And when I look back, you know, it's like, how good of a boss could I have really been when I was, you know, that out of it? And, you know, how good of a salesperson could I have been? And, you know, it just didn't make any sense. And in what you touched on, it's often almost like a sign of laziness to be that busy, to be crazy busy, because you're not figuring out how to work more effectively, how to empower others, how to choose, you know, priorities. That's the hard stuff, but it's definitely tough in this day and age. That's what we seem to hear. Everybody is just bragging about how crazy busy they are all the time.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, Rachel, when you sent me the message on LinkedIn, I'm going to read just a piece of it. You said, I've worked with clients of all sizes, all striving for enhanced results from their teams, and decision-making nearly always shows up in the list of capabilities requiring repair. Some teams do it too slowly, analysis paralysis. Some do it too quickly, uninformed and with unnecessary risk, and all are seeking a refinement to the process. We do facilitate that process enhancement, but only after we begin with a foundation of super candor. And I love that. It's like one smashed together word, super candor. So what is super candor?
First of all, that's really an earful. I did say that, didn't I? So what I meant by that, Kevin, is when I think about decision making within an organization, decision making is something that we do in service of getting someplace new. Right. So when an organization is making a decision to buy a new capability, it's really in service of getting to a new place, a place where we have this capability, a place where our process is more efficient. Right. It's about getting to that new destination. And for me, the way that I think about that is I sort of liken it to a directory that you would find in a shopping mall here in any mall in the United States. Right. And you have, let's say you have a destination in mind. There is a store that you want to go to, and you go over to that directory and you find the store, right? You find your destination. But before you can start marching ahead, there's one more thing you need to find on that directory. Any guesses?
Where I am right now?
You are here, right? You've got to find that little box that says you are here, because if you can see the destination, but you still don't know how to get there. Decision making, and where I see it so often go wrong in organizations, is that leaders are really great about having a vision, having a destination in mind, and they start charging ahead. But what they fail to capture is a clear picture of the you are here, right? So before any organization can start successfully marching toward that new destination, there needs to be this clear picture of the current state of things, right? If we're going to revamp a process because we want to gain an efficiency, well, what's causing the inefficiency right now, right? We need to get under the hood of that. And without that insight, we're never going to make our decisions. So we think about super candor as, describe it as the gritty, sexy, and uncensored truths about the way that things operate today in the current state. You know, there's this concept out there called psychological safety that you may be familiar with. And it's a phrase that was coined by Amy Edmondson, who's a professor at Harvard. And she describes psychological safety as a state in which it is safe or okay or permissible for people to take risks and share ideas and ask questions. For us, super candor sort of builds upon that. But what we think is it's not just safe or permissible, it's okay, but it is absolutely imperative that whatever level you're at in the organization, that you're willing to share the honest, gritty truths about how things operate today. Because when we don't share those insights, when we don't demonstrate that super candor, our leaders are left making decisions from an uninformed perspective. They're missing important data. And so that's really what Super Candor is about today. And, you know, I love to tell my leaders, for anybody who's familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right. If that is a bell for you, when you think about that pyramid, and at the bottom, you've got, you know, you need food and clothing and shelter. And then only when you have that, can you think about love and relationships, and you ultimately work your way up to this idea of self-actualization. And I always tell my leaders that naked, hungry people will never self-actualize. Right. And so if you want to get your organization to this state of being self-actualized, you need to understand what's keeping them naked and hungry at the bottom. And that's really what it's all about. And so we work with leaders to help kind of build the culture of super candor. So how do we create and articulate that imperative, and how to model it? How do we reward it? How do we make use of the data that comes through this idea of being super candid? So that's what it means for us.
So is this more on leadership to create, you know, a culture of candor where people feel free to express different opinions, to take risks, to challenge their boss, you know, or is it sort of on us as the individual to say, hey, I really need to let my boss, let the leadership know we are here before they go off and make that decision?
So it's such a good question. And I think the reality is it's both. But in all honesty, I think if it's not happening, then I do think it's incumbent upon the leaders to start to take their team on that journey.
And so again, like what kind of sparked you reaching out on LinkedIn to begin with, you know, when we're talking about values done right are great as decision-making tools. And that's sort of what I write about in my book, is it's like, I'd rather not have all these rules. I'd rather have standards or values that are actionable and more like guardrails. And you weren't saying that's a bad idea, but you're saying that's not sufficient. You know, we need more than that, because you can have values out there, but if people don't feel comfortable to say, hey, here's where we are, here's the real truth, then we're still not going to be making good decisions.
Absolutely. And I remember when I sent you my note, I was very careful to write yes and not yes but.
Right. I'm a big fan of that. For listeners who don't know of this, I don't know, it's not a trick, it's real, but you often, or whenever you say the word but, it negates everything that came before it. So I'm sort of notorious for using the and word, and I usually capitalize the word and so people realize it's like, yes, and I think you did the same kind of thing, and I chuckled that.
I totally did. And I'm glad you chuckled, because it's actually a tool, to the best of my understanding, that comes out of improv comedy. I learned it from Tina Fey, my great mentor of all things.
Of course, I was going to say, that's the first rule of improvisation, right? If you negate what someone's handed to you, the scene is over. There are no laughs. But if you go with it, then you can build upon it, and there's something there.
Exactly.
So, you know, I like to give our listeners something actionable. So let's say, you know, we've got our leaders out there who are listening. Mm-hmm. What's something, you know, let's challenge them. Like, what's something they can do in the next 24 hours to start on this journey of creating some psychological safety, to get their followers, their team members, not as naked and hungry?
Yeah.
So how do we start?
So I would encourage the leaders, think in the space of naked and hungry, and ask sort of the lowest level question that you can think of. You know, ask somebody on your team, what is the most kind of small, irksome, annoying thing that kind of makes you less efficient in your day, even if it's only taking you 10 extra minutes? It's kind of giving them that opportunity to show you the low hanging fruit, something that you can solve easily for them. And I think doing that starts to build support from the ground up. And so that would be my advice for leaders wanting to get the ball rolling.
I love that advice. I mean, instead of, you know, picking something that's going to be a little bit more challenging, or just a topic that's maybe too sensitive, something that's easy and actionable. I met a woman named Ellen, who was a great people leader, and she took over, it was similar to the story you started with. She took over a very large IT department and did not have an IT background. And she led with that question to great effect. I mean, when she did her hello one-on-ones, here's who I am, who are you, she always ended by saying, you know, what's something really small that's bugging you that might be taking you an extra 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day. And then she tried to action on all those. And then she, you know, they would get comfortable bringing things to her. They got bigger and bigger.
Props to her.
Yeah, props to her. That's right. That's right. So any other final wisdom, Rachel, before we wrap up this episode on the topic of decision-making?
Yeah, you know, the only last piece of advice I would offer would be think small. You know, one of the things that we preach at my company and in the work that we do is think about change from the perspective of what we call micro change. So don't think about trying to boil the ocean, but pull the finish line in as tightly as you can and think about the smallest increment of change you can make tomorrow rather than thinking big, starting big. 3 years from now, you've arrived at your destination.
Love it. Micro changes. And Rachel, how can our listeners find out more about you and your company?
Well, they can visit our website, which is leadabovenoise.com. If you click on our resources section, you will find a leader's guide to super candor, which we have there. And I also have something I would love to offer your listeners. If they go to leadabovenoise.com/Kevin, we have an 18-page guide that we use with our clients where we're taking them on a journey to help activate their team's performance. And that guide is available for download for anybody who's interested.
Wow. I really appreciate that extra effort with the backslash Kevin just for our audience. And I'm going to be downloading that guide myself. And, you know, Rachel, thanks for modeling again. You know, you were a listener who heard something and said, hey, I've got something to contribute to this conversation, reached out, and here we are. And I hope, you know, you inspire others to do the same. So Rachel, thanks for coming on to the LeadX show.
This has been a treat, Kevin. Thank you.
Friends, before we go, remember, at LeadX, we're on a mission to give free leadership training and professional development to everyone, anywhere, at any time. Visit leadx.org, that is, to check out our course of the day. Or visit leadx.org/Branson to download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership. And please take one quick minute. Go to leadx.org/subscribe to subscribe and leave a rating for this podcast, The LeadX Leadership Show. leadx.org/subscribe. Until next time, remember, you have incredible influence on those around you, your family, your team at work, your community. We all need you to lead mindfully. How will you lead today?